Welcome to the Maximize Your Potential podcast, where we demonstrate that you have unlimited potential. And when you maximize it every day, you will lead a life of happiness and fulfillment.
All right, welcome everybody to the podcast. And Al's back from his travels in Paris last week.
Yes,
so this is the joint podcast, the Leading from the Driver's Seat with Al Rattan and Maximize Your Potential with myself, Chris Baker. Welcome back, Al.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. It was a great trip.
Good. Glad you enjoyed it. And I know
life-changing, actually, in a lot of ways.
So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to finding out more from you on another day, and maybe we talk more about it next week. But this week
we've
got a guest, a first guest on our joint podcast.
Very excited.
Delighted to introduce Paul O'Leary. Paul and I have known each other for, gosh, 12 years now. And yet Paul's never been on a podcast before. He's asked several times and we've never got together, but this time we wanted to get together. And Paul wants to talk about the role of leadership in a changing landscape and how it's less about metrics and more about a focus on pastoral care and team coaching. And it's a subject that fascinates me, and Paul knows I'm interested in this. So Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it, Al. Thank you as well for allowing me to be on here today.
Great. Cool.
Paul, just give us like a sort of a 30-second intro into who you are and what you've done, and then we'll get into the subject.
Sure. Thank you. As you said, Chris, you and I have known each other for about 12 years. Time flies. As for Al's benefit, of course, you can tell I'm not from these parts. But I was raised in Britain, and I've had various careers in finance. And then I had a long career in marketing for the largest sports association in the country, leading lots of different teams. I've had a small career at Disney, and, it's obviously having the larger, company perspective. And then also currently I'm the VP of operations for a media company with five brands across the United States in different cities, also equally diverse as well. So lots of experience in leading different people.
Yeah, and I see you hopping on planes all over the country.
Yes, always going somewhere. Every weekend I feel like I'm going somewhere.
Cool. So okay. Cool.
Then you get airline status.
Right.
I'm very, very highly welcomed on Delta.
There you go.
So, I'm treated very well when I fly Delta. So thank you, though.
Good. So, Paul, tell us about this topic. Why is it important to you? What do you want to share? And Al and I will just sort of chip in as you go along, and maybe ask more questions and take it from there.
Well, hopefully, we have something to add.
I'm sure both of you chaps with such great experience and worldly knowledge will have something to add to it. I think one of the things in our sort of post-pandemic world that all of us are realizing is that the role of leadership has changed, and that these days, the world has changed. We're all trying to scramble to make sure that we're being as effective leaders as possible, and making sure that in this changing landscape, we have to change with it and ensure that we're leading our teams to get the best results we want, mm-hmm. as well, at the same time, having some personal growth and understanding more about ourselves along the way. And for me, one of the biggest kind of highlights on the post-pandemic world for me is that managing people is different in the, we all see the media headlines about, there's job vacancies, nobody wants to work. And when I think it's different to that, I think the priorities have changed in that the workforce today looks at the work week, they look at money and the economy and the system differently. So you can't change that. None of us can change that on this call. And I think mm-hmm. that one of the ways to work with that is to look at the way we lead our teams who are part of that generational shift. And basically see, in my opinion, I think the focus is less on metrics and results and driving forward, and more about pastoral care and coaching the team to be better individuals, better workers, and to, basically bring them up with you along that journey.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, we hear about the great resignation and disengaged employees and one study I read a while back, and now Chris and I mentioned it on an earlier podcast, but it was actually a LinkedIn study that They quoted a Harvard Business Review study, actually, or some the other way around, that about 92% or something, 82% of employees said they would stay with their current company if their employer actually invested in them and helped them with their personal growth and development. And I guess, you know, when did you see this shift take place? When did this change happen? From people,
I think
this is now the way we are in this society.
So I think even before the pandemic, this was bubbling under the surface, and I think that we've had a generational shift in values. Not good, not bad, nothing. You know, it's more just a change, and I think the world is a lot more open, a lot more connected. Obviously, we're all in different parts of the world, all having this great discussion through the use of technology. I mean, social media has changed perspective. Mm-hmm. So I think now people have, you know, the information superhighway was the buzzword in the 90s that we all had. And now we have that in the palm of our hand and we spend our time looking at cat videos on YouTube. So, I mean, we all do. my personal favorite is not cat videos. I enjoy watching ones with where they restore pieces of equipment and tooling, and which is always, I get these raised eyebrows for that. But I think that with that knowledge and power also comes that shift in the way that the world and the society is changing. People are more tolerant in some ways of different behaviors in the past and changes and, you know, and that they than they would have been before. But I think the other thing is they're almost less tolerant of longer working hours. They see, you know, they now are more empowered with that knowledge to understand why. I mean, if you look at the FIRE movement, which I'm sure you're both familiar with, where people, you know, basically, you know, work as hard as they can and then retire early. And there's some great bloggers out there that you can follow. One of my favorites is a guy called Jay Money, who actually is one you should both check out if you don't. Subscribed to him for years. He sold his blog and now he's bought it back. And I'm so excited because his perspective on money is different from what is traditional. And so I think you have a more diverse, you know, working crowd today than it ever was before. And I think this was all in the build up to the pandemic. I think the pandemic was that great kind of shift where people stopped, took stock and realized that, you know, maybe I don't like my job. Maybe I do like my job, but I'm not happy with my boss. And we all know the saying that people don't leave jobs, they leave leaders.
Exactly.
So I think those, and I was with exit interviews, exactly what you were just bringing up, Al, that if the company invested in me, I would stay. And I think my question that I always ask during that process is what could I have done different? Not the company. As a leader, what can I have done different?
Yeah.
And usually the response is always, you've been great to me, but I know that you've gone to bat for me and you've battled with the company for X, Y, you know, whatever, resources or training. And I do think, at least in my experience in the last few years, there's almost been a shift of, you know, we go back to the 80s and 90s of those corporate training exercises and, you know, days away, and there's none of that anymore. Now the, you know, development and employee development has shifted to this e-learning approach where you sit in front of a computer for 4 hours and do
there's
something
no,
and say
no engagement. There's no,
no engagement. There's no, it's a checkbox exercise.
Yeah.
And so I think
I got it off my list. So now they can leave. Right. They'll stop bugging me about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's where that's almost a complete disconnect to what this generation is looking for. They're looking for people to be transparent, to be honest. They're looking for them to go ahead and, you know, work with them and say, listen, this is the bad feedback that I have for you. This is how you can grow from that, you know?
And I think we saw that this whole shift to working from home that was forced upon so many during the pandemic, that many people are saying, I do not want to go back to that office environment, right? Or I only want to go back, you know, 2 or 3 days a week and be able to have the flexibility to work from home and the freedom. And that, I think that gave people a taste of it. I'm just, you know, like, just totally off topic, but just think of the massive amount of office space that's going to be available
in
downtown major centers around North America, around the world, where people are not going to be returning to the office to work.
It already is, Al. I mean, I was discussing that with somebody, one of my team, in a one-on-one yesterday, and saying about how I've been to different areas around Disney, see, you know, working with different teams, collaborating, and I walk in and there's an office and there's like maybe half a dozen people in an office that would house 100, right? And you look at all these and you think, wow, what a lot of wasted space, right? And you know, against part of it is the sort of the hybrid workforce, but part of it is that, again, I think post-pandemic, a lot of people didn't end up coming back, whether it was their choice or the company's choice, right? And they're trying to run leaner. But what they're doing, to Paul's point, is they're not, you know, most companies, I would say, are not caring for their people in terms of developing them. So it's a very short-sighted viewpoint, right? Because you're not thinking 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line. You're thinking, well, I can save like maybe $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 this year by not doing training.
Right.
But Richard Branson said, right, you know, or someone said to, I think it was Richard Branson, they'd said, well, why do you want to spend all that money on training just for people to leave? And he said, well, what if I don't spend it on training and they stay?
They stay, yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. And I had the conversation, I'm involved in a program where we're trying to develop a leadership training program for like my division within Disney at the moment. And one of the things we were talking about today is that we're going to design a deck as to go in front of the executives and that we were told, well, they're going to ask us, why do we want to do this rather than the standard courses? Mm-hmm. So in line of what Paul was saying, I said, well, the standard course is you do a course online, right? And you get a checkbox on your D-Learn to say that you've done it. So it goes on your record card, and then you never do anything with it again.
Exactly.
So what we want to do is, like Al, like the course we're designing for your company in Canada is we want to teach them, but then we want to take it and we want to immerse them in that, right? So that they're living it. So I said we're gonna teach it, they're gonna live it, and then they're gonna lead it, and that's how we'll develop other people.
Exactly.
And actually, I like that, because for me, one of the at least personal sort of soul searching things during the post-pandemic world that I've had is that trying to understand my impact in the world on not just how I behave, what I do, what I say. And I think I know, Chris, in some of your previous, you know, podcasts that you've done and shows, you've talked about a lot of this. It's not often what you say, but how you say it. Right. And I think that there's that discussion, particularly with teams. I mean, right now I have an amazing team of rock star people. We've had to go through a transition at the moment with some cost cutting and budget changes. And each one of them has taken it very well. And the reason they have, the feedback I've asked is, I have been completely transparent to the point as much as I can be from, you know, the board above. Right. And that transparency and open communication of me calling them and saying, do you have any questions? And being honest and saying, well, this is how this works. I wish I could share this with you, but I can't, but I can explain it to you on the telephone. Or just that complete, this is where we're going, this is the roadmap, versus the sort of smoke and mirrors mystery of the workforce of old. Well, that's beyond your pay grade, don't worry about it. I think when you give people that transparency and they see behind the curtain, sort of a Wizard of Oz reference, they see the man behind the curtain, when they realize that, they tend to engage and respect you more as a leader, but also you end up getting a better worker who sees the vision. It's very easy for companies to say, I mean, Chris, I know that, you know, a certain company in Orlando is very, you know, stay with us. And you don't have any informational transparency. And I think that that's one of the dangers in leading a team today, is that they want to know, so they know if they can personally buy into it. It's not just about, I'm passionate about this company, this brand, this product, so I'm going to stick with it. It's more than that. They want to feel their personal identity as part of it. Or on the flip side, it is a, you know, we don't live to work, we work to live. I come, I do my job, I do an amazing job, the best I can during my time, and that's it. You don't have almost, I don't want to say this abusive relationship that you have with teams years ago, where people are, well, it's expected of you to stay in the office long hours, it's expected to you to, you know, can you just call me and can you work on this on the weekend? You know, that stuff is gone. If you do that now, you lose people.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I remember back, like at my first a store as an assistant manager with a big box retailer up here in Canada. I was 21 years old. I walked into the manager's office. I was promoted from the district by the district manager and sent to this store. And I walk in, I say, hi, I'm Al. I'm your new associate manager. And the first words out of his mouth were, I work 7 days a week and so do you. And that was, That was expected. I was 21 and naive and, you know,
So you did it.
And I did it exactly because this is what you did to get ahead of this company back in the day. And you can't do that.
No.
Now I wouldn't do it. Like, I don't care who you are.
I do think it's funny because what you just said, I mean, I've been at, you know, in those situations too, where you're working 7 days a week for 30, 40 days straight, 10, 12 hours a day. And ultimately what happens, the results are maybe marginally higher than they would be if you only worked 5 days a week, 8 hours. But the impact on you personally and professionally, not just your personal life, but professional life, is you're burnt out, unproductive, and disgruntled. And,
right.
You know, it's almost a behavior you have to unlearn. I mean, I've talked to former, you know, coworkers, you know, in the last couple of years, and they've said to me, you know, we all sort of had Stockholm syndrome in this role, or we all, you know, and it's interesting. You have to almost understand some form of psychology and some form of almost like mental health coaching to understand your body's reaction to that. And it was almost a trauma response. You know, people say, well, I have to go to the office because if I'm not there, nothing happens. Yeah. I mean, I've worked with people like that who, if they're not there at sunrise and they're not staying until 9 p.m., 7 days a week, it's like the place doesn't function for them.
Yeah, first in, last out type of mentality.
Exactly.
Right? If you want to get ahead, that's what I need to do. But that's just not accepted standards anymore. Can I, you know, okay, folks, we see each other while we're recording this podcast. And I saw this. Sorry, guys. I'm trying to pull up this image here. See if I can share it with you guys. So I actually just saw this just before we hopped on. So those of you that can't see it, it's actually a graphic that Leadership Management International shared. It says 1 in 5 employees is at risk of burnout due to low employee and leadership engagement. Mm-hmm. 190 billion is stress-related burnout may cause a healthcare cost of $190 billion a year in US. And then here's another statistic similar to the one I talked about. 93% of workers would stay at the company longer if the organization invested in their careers. And I think, Paul, with your whole thing about care and coaching and what we wanted to talk about tonight, I think that ties in well with the topic we're on. And I just wanted to pull that up and share that real quick with you
all. I mean, I think that's perfectly topical. And one of the other items I've been preaching a lot, particularly when you're having this, you know, okay, you're managing down with the team that, you know, your direct reports, but you also have to manage up as well. I mean, managing up is always this, you know, fun term that everybody likes. So what does it really mean? I think in this situation, you have a team of dynamic, diverse, passionate individuals that are very, very sensitive to change, very, you know, the nuances of the workplace, that it's unfamiliar to them, and they are wanting to do a good job. If you lead them correctly, they'll perform how you want them to. But you, as that leader, you know, everybody reports to somebody. Even if it's your own company, you're reporting to somebody, the IRS, you know. Yeah. But I think that ultimately, you know, you have to manage up as well, because when you are being called before, you know, your leader, your boss, your board, whatever it is, and they're saying to you, well, why is this person not performing? And you're not going to sit there and say, well, you know, their dog was just, you know, run over, their aunt just died, you know, because that doesn't matter. That's irrelevant to them. But you have to manage up and say they're doing the best they can right now under the circumstances. And I think that there's a big, huge amount of shift in, you know, in the world today with, it was going on before the pandemic as well, in terms of like openness about mental health, depression, you know, anxiety, you know, medication. And I'm somebody, I'm very open about it. You know, I'm medicated. I've had therapy. And I always remember once actually during a therapy session, and it was work. This was actually interesting related to what you just shared on that graphic. I've very clearly remember being there in the therapist room. Therapist is sitting there, they're on this, they're always on this chaise lounge, you're always sitting there like, you know, talking about your childhood or whatever. But my phone was ringing, and then he said, do you need to answer that? I said, well, I want to. And he said, well, who is it? And I said, it's work. And he said, that hasn't stopped ringing. I said, now you know why I'm talking to a therapist. and I think that's the human cost of poor leadership, is the human cost of the old working way. And I think that, you know, the managing up, you have to those, you know, beyond you, you have to basically make sure you're crafting the narrative that they understand in words and language they understand, versus just saying, well, they're just different. You know, I think it has to be, no, these are productive workers, they're amazing. And, you know, I'm managing the way that I know to get the most out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in general, people want to know that you care, right? And they want to know that you listen to them. And very often they don't even necessarily want you to do anything. It's just,
yes,
let me be heard, right? And that's the same with customer relations, right? Customer service, Al, you'll know that. Paul, you'll know that. I know that. You know, a customer, they sometimes they just want to rant. And when you let them rant, they go, okay, thanks very much, and they're off.
Yeah, right? So true.
You do anything. And I think this is one of the things that we all know, right? And we agree on, that's why we're here talking about it, that these are not skills that leaders are taught, unfortunately.
Right?
And this is the soft skills, people skills. It's just how to deal with people. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think that it's a generational thing. I do agree with Paul that the Gen Zs, the millennials, they want to be aligned with a company that has got values, right? And that's important to them.
It's the social responsibility end of things. They're absolutely important to them. Yeah.
Right. But I think everybody, you know, I mean, I'm not a millennial Gen Z quite, but I still want to know that my leaders care for me. And if they don't, or I, you know, I get the sense that I'm not cared for, I don't necessarily perform at the same level. Right?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm Gen X, right? I'm Gen X. And I brought up with work hard, right? Work hard, earn your living, and show up and do your job well. And it's tough for me sometimes dealing with some of the younger folks who may not necessarily have the same priorities that I have been used to through the years. It's a challenge.
And actually, I think that's what this is all about, right? It's basically about how do you, knowing that, and it's almost recognizing your style and mm-hmm. how that doesn't gel with their style, but how to bridge that gap. Right. I mean, to me, right. There's so many different ways that you can bridge that gap. And most of it really comes down to communication. If you ever ask, I had this discussion with somebody, actually, I was on a plane last week and this next to me was an empty seat, which is these days with travel, it doesn't usually happen. And to the seat at the window was actually this 19-year-old young man who was very, which this blew me away. He sat down and said, "Hi, my name is Ethan," shook my hand. And it shocked me because that just doesn't happen. And it sort of piqued my interest and we got talking. And he had lots of questions for me. You know, what do you do? Do you mind me asking this? No, I'm an open book. Talk to me. And I said, you know what's nice? I said, you will go far in life. And he said, why? I said, because you sat down, shook my hand and talked to me. Mm-hmm. I said, you didn't put your headphones on. You didn't sit there. And I think that those things are very rare.
Right.
But if you don't have that, then you have to have a way of getting the most out of that person, of whatever right. that role they're in. But one of the questions he did ask me, which I thought was really intriguing, and I actually made a note of it to discuss this today, was, when do you ask for help? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you know, I'm in my career. His desire was to work in fashion in Milan. That's what he told me, because that's what my lifelong goal. I'd love to do it. What do you think? And my advice to him was very sort of almost traditional. I said, look, I've worked with lots of young people. Whatever school you go to is irrelevant. Doesn't matter. I said, you need to go to school, but it doesn't matter which one you do. Go to one that's the most economical for you. And my other piece of advice was, if that's your passion, you need to find a way to working in that world. So networking, get business cards made. You know, the traditional advice of go right. hang out where these people hang out. Go chat with them. Network. Go join these events, clubs, organizations. All this advice. And he's like, okay. And he goes, well, how do you know when to ask for help? And I said, well, it's a good question, because I've had lots of younger people say to me, well, I can do it all. And I said, you can't do everything yourself. It right. takes a village, as the old saying is. And yeah. I think, right. you know, when working with these people, if they don't know, because they were brought up to be independent, headstrong, you know, go-getters, I am going to be the greatest on earth. You have to almost bring them down a peg, but not in a negative way, but in a way that shows that, listen, you know, all of us are in the same boat together. We're not getting out alive. And the way to work is to work together as a team and, mm-hmm. you know, and support each other.
And I think that's great. I mean, so when do you ask for help, Chris? When do you ask for help? I'm going to be honest with you. As I've gotten older and I've realized and I've understood, I used to nod, smile and nod and pretend I knew what everybody was talking about. I just go, hey, excuse me a minute. I don't understand, right? So I've gotten pretty good at asking for help as I've gotten older, because I don't care what anybody thinks anymore.
Yeah.
What, Chris, when is the right time to ask for help? What do you think?
I think you should be constantly asking for it personally. I think it's you know, one of the things that I've been working on the last, I guess, 5 or 6 years is really, you know, making sure that I ask for input all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not, again, as a leader, particularly, it's not about me. Right. It's about we and the team. Yeah. And I look at like the teams I'm leading now. I don't do their job every day. So it would be wrong of me to make decisions about what they do without consulting them. So I constantly ask them, like, you know, what's going on? What ideas have you got? What's working? What's not working? What are some of those things that you look at and you go, why do we do this, right? Or why don't we do this? And share it, right? So effectively, that's asking for help, right? All the time, because we don't know it all. And the best people to advise us are those that are doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it's keeping the lines of communication open, because I can tell you, I've done a lot of workshops with companies this year, and seriously, doesn't matter where I am, the number one issue is communication.
Yep.
Exactly. Every time, communication.
And actually, what you just said, Chris, is exactly how I've approached at least the last few roles that I've been in. Whenever I've come into new teams who don't know me, obviously you have to build trust. And I always, my first thing I say is, in terms of trust, everybody starts here for me, unless you prove otherwise. I said, everybody gets equal standing until you change my mind. And so I will trust you implicitly unless you change that. The next thing I always do is I say, I'd like to schedule a one-on-one with you where you just show me what you do every day. And the first thing they think, because of old world leadership, is, oh God, my job's on the line.
Yeah.
And I reassure them straight away, no, this is not. This is actually so I can help you. Mm-hmm. I'd like to understand every facet of what you do. And from an operations perspective, I can offer advice, or, you know, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And every single time, it's been the most successful thing, because A, they feel validated and heard, like Chris was saying, where as you're doing it, you find those things that they won't bring to your attention. Oh, well, I hate this system. It's the worst thing on earth, but it's just what we use. And my question is always, why? What would you prefer? And they go, oh, this is amazing piece of software that everybody else uses that I'd love. It's $3 a month more than we pay. And I'm like, well, why aren't we using it then? So those are the feedbacks that if you ask for feedback, you do not get.
Right.
So I think when you go through that and you sort of live a day in their lives, you learn more. Not only do you learn more about the job they do, it means you're a better leader, because to your point, Chris, when you have to make decisions, and I've had these a lot in the past few months, and I say to the team, this is going to affect you. What do you think? And they say, well, it's really your call. And I said, well, I know that, but I want to understand your perspective, because that's the value to me, is if you're not happy, then we have to find another way. If you're happy and you think it's going to work, or you have other solutions, I think it's fine. But it's the engaging them in that process. And it's not manipulative. It's actually a very open and honest communication, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I call it the input equation. We haven't got time to go through it now, but basically if you ask for input, they take ownership and responsibility, and therefore they'll have pride and satisfaction in what they do. And guess what? The results will be better.
More engaged.
So we look back to the topic of this, Paul, as you say, I don't focus on results, even though I'm probably measured on results. I don't focus on results. I focus on the behaviors and the actions that if you get those right, the results will come. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it all comes back to one thing, right? And now we've talked about it time and time again, it comes back to people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we need to care for our people. We need to care for ourselves as well. Right. Because you can't be one way yourself and be different to your people, right? The same. Right. So that would be my thing. And Paul, I think it's been a great topic, a great subject. We've gone 28 minutes, so we knew.
Honestly, we could easily go another half hour on
this. It's
been amazing.
Sure.
And Paul, we would love to have you back if you can.
I'd be glad to.
It would be fantastic. And I thank you for coming today and adding value to us with your insight and your wisdom. It's been great to get to know you. Chris and Paul go back many years. Paul and I go back about 32 minutes.
It's a good 32 minutes.
It's been a great 32 minutes.
A great Chris, 32 minutes.
I'll let you wrap it up. Paul, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having you here. Chris, you want to wrap things up for us?
Yeah, we normally give people a task, don't we, Al, about at the end
Paul,
of this.
What would be a task you would give our listeners, something that they could work on personally to help them develop in this area of maybe coaching or engaging with their teams and, you know, or caring for their teams in a greater way?
My number one task to give to people is to spend the next week in your role analyzing what you do, how you say it, and see how the reaction is, and really analyze what you are saying to your team and how they react to it, because how their reaction will tell you whether you're handling it the right way or not. I think if you learn to pause and maybe say or act a different way, I mean, nobody's perfect. I'm not. I think that's a thing to improve and to learn from and understand. Even if you don't take steps to make it better, to understand your process.
Amazing. Excellent.
Yeah, I love that. Again, it's the feelings, right? People mm-hmm. don't, they won't remember what you say. It's how you make them feel, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a great piece of advice. So yeah, people do that. And then again, follow us on social media. Let us know what you think. Ask mm-hmm. questions. If there's something you want us to cover, we'd be happy to do that. And yeah, Paul, I'll echo Al's sentiment. We'd definitely love to have you back on the podcast in the future, and wish you well in everything you do, and keep going on this journey, because you're doing it the right way for sure.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Have an amazing week. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Maximize Your Potential podcast with myself, Chris Baker. If you enjoyed this content, I encourage you to subscribe so you get notifications as each new episode is released. And then if you could rate and review it on your podcast platform, that would be much appreciated. In addition, share the podcast with as many people as you think would benefit from these messages. I want to continually bring you these messages of hope and application that you can put into your life so you can maximize your potential every day. In the show notes is all my contact details if you want to reach out to me. Be more than happy to help you, and I look forward to catching up with you soon. Have a magical day, and bye for now.